bulletproof wallets. 20 G kitchen sets made out of Korea. Top seer, gots to be a lot to see a rocks. Knots be read up behind the stove, asking how Maria popped Leah. Cursed out Nia, burst out a purse with the guard Judea from Stark Pizzeria. Peace hate to be especially when the shots ring off in slow motion when your head hit the meter. You lost 2 liters at the scene, came Skeeter. Peter slid through, shook him down for his reaper. James chased Teresa with a hatchet on Easter. 2 murders in the hood, we call it double features. Watch how I eat this, freak the best teacher. After prayer with the preacher, I get skeet in the bleachers. And your girl, I might eat her. I'm a lover, not a biter. I still catch a 4 pizza.
You can be as good as the rest of them, or as bad as the worst. So don't hate me, you better move over, yeah.
You fucking idiot.
Yo.
Wallace, motherfucker.
That's right.
All my shit is bulletproof.
You sleep for the motherfucker.
Bulletproof project.
Yeah.
Bulletproof Wallace. Duck feet.
Rag goo.
You heard? You bird ass niggas.
Word.
Y'all niggas ain't got a chance. 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 Chance.
Potential excel. You meditating?
I thought it was trying to stay awake. You have some people, you know, that kind of wear on you.
They're
kind of get you a little sleepy. So you have to get your burst of energy. That's how it is on the basketball court.
Listen.
When you hear, no, I'm saying sometimes you know, you hear people talking in a huddle and they're like, blah, blah, blah. And then the game starts, you go, like, okay, time to go.
Yeah, you snap to it.
There's no different on the sidelines.
All right, Moose Skill number 82. Got my boy, Bad News Ramen. That's me. You're
be
better
you,
have my
your own boy.
I was trying to stay awoke.
You're trying to stay awoke?
That's how I am, like, every Raw, dude. Like, I try to stay up and watch it, and I always seem to fall asleep right at the end, so. I was watching Raw. Everything was going good. It was main event time. I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden, I wake up and it's like 6 in the morning, dude. So, it kind of, that was Eric Snow. He fell asleep during a radio broadcast of a, not a radio broadcast, but it was a TV broadcast of a
Sixers
game. Which, and I really don't fault the guy for falling asleep during a Sixers game. But if you listen to that thing again, you know, like sometimes people wear on you, you know, and you're kind of, you know, standing in the huddle here and blah, blah, blah. And that's pretty much like a John Cena promo. So I thought that was fitting this time around. So I want to get in, actually, into Roman Reigns when he first came out on Raw and he cut that promo. I thought he took like 55 steps forward with that. And then I kind of got mad at the end of Raw after watching this morning. But let's go ahead and what was your reflections on that promo that he cut at the beginning of Raw?
I mean, I think it's good. It's like a total 180 from what John Cena's doing, right? I mean, he's not coming out and, you know, Reigns is in, he's not going to come with the one-liners and stuff like that. But it's kind of what you said about a year or so ago. It's a very Kevin Nash-like promo. It's like, he's not making a bunch of jokes. He just comes through and basically says, you know, I'm going to kick your ass.
That's an Ole Anderson promo.
Yeah, well, but, you know.
But
I'm going back to what you said. And the serious tone of it, it's a promo that works. It's good that they're not letting him go on for like 10 minutes at a time. He's not ready to have any real long promos, but he comes out and says what he's going to do and then get to the fighting. So
the favorite part I liked about that, of course, was that he's able to play off the fans. I mean, the fans are saying John Cena sucks, and he stops. And then he's able to say, yeah, when it comes to Roman Reigns or whatever, John Cena does suck.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I mean, the promo was good in itself. And then he adds that, and I'm sitting there going like, okay, the biggest knock against this guy that we had was that, you know, we're afraid that he's not that good on the mic. This guy's ready to go, dude. I mean, this guy's ready to be champion right now. And what really kind of made me mad, or not so much mad, but just kind of like scratching my head, which I do a lot with when I don't wash my head after a while because I got dandruff and psoriasis and all that good stuff. But, you know, he raises John Cena's hand. And then John Cena raises his hand. And here's the whole thing is that the sad thing about that whole display at the end of Raw was that Cena was not giving Roman Reigns the rub. Roman Reigns was giving Cena the rub. And it shouldn't be that way with your champion. Especially, Cena's, what, 10 years strong or whatever he likes to say? I mean, Roman Reigns over the past 6 months has gotten way more heat, like good heat, with the fans than Cena has in the past 10 years. And here's Reigns having to give Cena the rub. It's just like another kick in the face, or like WWE spitting in my face over here, dude, with that stuff.
Well, I didn't really see it that way.
I did see it that way. No, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to tell you why you're wrong.
Just trying to stay awake.
Are
you meditating? I'm trying to stay awake.
I didn't like Reigns coming out and saving Cena, right? It's like, that to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right? But the thing that, if you look at it with the whole arm raising thing, right? So Reigns raised Cena's arm, which, like, kind of the first time there was kind of no reaction, right? It was kind of awkward. And then Cena raised Reigns' arm, and then the crowd went nuts, right? And then if you notice the second time, Reigns raised Cena's hand again, and the whole crowd booed. Reigns just looked at him and started laughing. So I don't know if you caught that part.
Reigns looked at Cena and started laughing?
Yeah. I thought that part was great. So, like, even though I did think that the purpose for Reigns doing the run-in to save Cena, I don't really get it. I mean, I can see, okay, he wants to get his hands on Orton at any chance possible, and he's going after Kane. But to try to go out to save Cena, whatever. But that whole thing with the hand-raising, if you look at it the second time Cena raised Cena's hand, and then he got a big boo from Montreal, and then he just kind of looked. It was a smirk more than a laugh, but it was pretty funny, I thought.
I just don't understand the whole thing. I mean, I just don't understand, like, this guy is able to ad-lib, and the fans like him, and then they have to say that they respect each other. It just doesn't make any sense to me, dude. I mean, I mean, how many times are you going to try to pump Cena up to be something that nobody wants him to be? Like, nobody likes the guy. I mean, people like him, but they don't like the idea of John Cena. I mean, it's just like... it's like Pollyanna, you know. It's like you know what John Cena is. John Cena is like when it was like there was a football game that I was playing, and it was like I think it was a Raiders game, and the score was tied, and the whizzes at the TV station, it was like 4 or 5 o'clock, and like, oh, it's 5 o'clock, we got to put on Heidi, and so they put on Heidi before the game, you know, before the game's concluded, and they start Heidi, and like, so all these fans are like, well, what the heck happened during the game? I think the Raiders actually won that game, but they would never be able to know because they decided to play Heidi at 5 o'clock. So the hate that you have when, you know, if you're a big time Raiders fan, and don't get me started about Raiders fans. I mean, those are the bane of my existence, like John Cena is, but it's like, he's like Heidi, dude. Like, put the guy in pigtails. Yeah. And let her cry about her old ass grandfather and her dumb ass dog. I mean, that's what Cena is, dude. I mean, he's just like a waste of time, dude. He's like, there's no place for this guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't say exactly. He's know like, he's where like you're Shirley, going with the Heidi, but
he's like Shirley Temple, dude. That's what he's like.
If I was gonna try,
he's on the Good Ship Lollipop over here, dude, and he's dancing with all the flipping sailors, and all the old ladies are loving it because some little fat kid is dancing with some old ass sailors and stuff, dude.
Yeah, if I was gonna try to make a comparison, I'd say. I try to keep it a little more
like buckwheat.
Current. Yeah. No, well, we got the
Spanky.
We got the All-Star game coming up for baseball in about a week here, week and a half. And I think, like, my comparison would be he's like the guy that was an All-Star 10 years ago and is still making his way on the All-Star team, even though, like, he doesn't put up the numbers, but like, baseball is telling you this guy's a star. This guy's a star.
What are you saying? He's like Derek Jeter or something?
I'm not saying Jeter, because Jeter deserves to go out on his last run, because he's
that's
actually
what I want to hear.
A job. Legitimate champion. But like, you get these like guys like
Albert Pujols?
No, nah, I would say like a Ripken, right?
Skinny bitches.
Like, bitches I want to fuck. Like the end of Ripken's career, right? I mean, the guy had this streak, right? You know, the all time consecutive game streak. But if you looked at his numbers, the guy was like a 240 hitter, you know, not a whole lot of power. He really didn't have anything going on towards the last 3-4 years of his career. but everyone, like everyone around baseball, oh, this guy's the ambassador. This guy is what baseball's all about. Oh, you have to love this guy, right? And you know, by all accounts, Cal Ripken's a good guy. I'm not trying to like discredit Cal Ripken, though he's probably waiting to get that 2,000 game streak. But
dropping bombshells left and right.
First you say
Cal Ripken sucks, and then you say, okay, Cal Ripken was on roids. What?
I'm not going to go like that Rome caller who said he'd pay $1 million to spray Cal Ripken with a blast of mace. I'm not going that far, but I'm just saying, like, he was not a good hitter towards that last, like, 4 years or so of his career, but he was an all-star every year because, you know, they had to perpetuate this idea that Cal Ripken was, like, this all-time great. And, you know, I'm not saying that he wasn't, you know, deserved Hall of Famer and all that, okay, but at the end of his career, he was just kind of a broke-down shell of himself. But, you know, you were force-fed that this guy was, like, what baseball was all about just because he played.
So let's stick on force-fed then. So we're force-fed with Cal Ripken. I never had a problem with Cal Ripken. Granted, I did kind of fall asleep during his at-bats. But and the last year that, you know, he was an all-star, he did it a home run. So, I mean, it's like at least he delivered, you know.
When a guy's in his last year of his career, I have no problem with them putting him in that game and having the send-off.
Okay.
But those last...
I see what you're saying.
But those last 3-4 years, like, when he was just in complete free fall in terms of his abilities, and they were still pumping him up, like, oh, this is the guy that everyone has... This is the pinnacle of virtue that everyone must aspire to. It's like, no, the guy's done, and there's like, 10 guys out there that are better than him that should be on the All-Star team.
So, yeah, and that's kind of my whole problem with seeing is that you have a bunch of young guys that are really starting to get it done. From top to bottom, and then, I mean, the whole raw, you have all this young talent that is really starting to make a name for themselves. I mean, you can look at that tag team match with the Usos and the Wyatts. I mean, great tag team match, and then you have these other matches as well. You know, I thought Randy Orton and Dean Ambrose, it wasn't the greatest match, but it was fun to watch.
I thought that was a really good match.
Yeah, actually. I mean, it was fun to watch. I mean, I've seen Dean Ambrose perform better. You know, I think I think he's starting to learn the way Randy Orton is, which is fine. As a first match between these two guys, if we're going to see a lot more of them, I thought it was a very good match. You know, Jericho versus The Miz, that was a great match. That was a fun match to watch. It's funny, you had all these young guys, and you have like a veteran, like an elder statesman in Jericho, just put on a killer match. And then what's the main event, you know, slotted for? It's John Cena versus Seth Rollins, and It was an okay match. I mean, there were some good spots with Cena. I mean, I was watching that match going, okay, you know, okay, this is good. I mean, I like that power move that Cena did. I was trying to find ways to like Cena. And then I think there's the breakdown and stuff, which I thought was fine. Roman Reigns comes out. Thought it was fine, but it's just like you don't have to do that. Let Roman Reigns be the character that he is. Don't break the wall and like have him be friends with Cena or something like that, because it's going to make him take a step back. Mm-hmm. like you have to do it for John Cena, because John Cena is like this golden boy, and we're so used to saying like, oh, you know, John Cena is like the face of the black. I was just like, I don't care, dude. It's like, I'm just, this guy is who he is, and he's not entertaining. He's a cornball. And I just get tired of him. I mean, you know, he comes out with his neon shirt. He comes out, you know, and he's like, you have two belts, dude. Like, why are you wearing it like that? You know, you just look like a flipping idiot. You know, and then he has to come and bring out his towel too, so he can sell it or whatever it is. It's like, dude, join the Rock and Roll Express. I mean, that's what they used to do. You know, it's like, just get off it. And it's like, it's not working, dude. And I just get tired of the whole fanfare of that guy. So talking about the whole fanfare of John Cena, and then kind of what Twitter was buzzing about on Tuesday was, I don't know if you know about this, but Main Event, they had like a recap of, it was like a Raw recap or some type of recap or whatever it was. It was on the Main Event, and they mentioned CM Punk. So everybody out of the woodwork saying like, oh, you know, WWE has finally acknowledged CM Punk. Is he coming back? Because AJ's back. Yeah, his wife is back. Is he going to come back? I mean, where do you kind of stand on this? And we normally don't do this,
right?
The whole fanboy thing, but I think, you know. Well,
generally, I'm thinking that he's not going to come back, but there's like a couple of factors that are coming in. One, I guess somewhere around the 17th is when his contract officially expires. But yeah, what they do on network, they have they have some countdown show, and is counting down the longest title reigns in history. And obviously, he's got the number one. But I think the thing that's sort of telling about it is, they've really omitted CM Punk from the show, and they've gone out of their way to not mention things, like pretend that things that he did didn't happen. I can't remember, but like last week there was something in the show where they mentioned, and they were running through a list of guys that have done something. And
CM it was one of them was Paul Heyman has never managed someone in the Money in the Bank, and
is that what it was?
Yeah, that was one of them. Yeah, it was like, you know, they were talking about Cesaro or something like that, and they're saying like, well, Paul Heyman has never managed someone or has ever represented someone in the Money in the Bank, and everybody's saying like, well, wait a minute, he represented CM Punk at the last Money in the Bank.
Yeah, there's a couple of things like that where they blatantly told a mistruth, a miscarriage of justice, as Gorilla would say, about something that CM Punk did. So now that they come on and have this countdown that has to end with CM Punk, well, I guess in the top three, I guess depends on if they're going with whatever they consider that modern era to be, because technically San Martino probably had the belt for a longer time than him. But if they're going in the modern era, you know, CM Punk's it. And all time, I think he ranked like third or fourth on the all-time list. So you can't do a top 10 and just completely omit that. So the fact that they would choose to do that is kind of curious, I think. I don't think just because AJ came back, it means Punk's coming back. But I think there's a couple of hints that are there that lead to the possibility that it could happen.
So where does that leave us?
If you look at what's been happening over these last couple of weeks, they had a ton of guys coming back. So I think that we really didn't get to this last week because there was so much that happened in that Raw. And more than anything, I really didn't get to throw it down, but I think last week's Raw was 100% the reset button. And I think coming out of the pay-per-view, right, they put the belt on Cena. It's kind of what you said, will they hit the reset button? I think that's exactly what they did. It's like they brought back Jericho. They brought back The Miz. They brought back AJ. They turned Jack Swagger face, which we didn't even get to talk about last week either. So they did all these kinds of things. And if they're going through, if they're doing that, you know, this might all be in concert with the idea they got rid of that previous writer. Maybe they're realizing, okay, we need to bring some guys back now, right? I mean, obviously, if they made the call to bring Jericho back, I think they feel like, yeah, something's missing right now. So that could lend itself to a situation where they would reach out and try to get Punk again. So, I don't know if he's ready to come back. I don't know what he wants to do, but I think the possibility is real.
So are you happy with them hitting the reset button? Because they hit the reset button, but it wasn't such a – this is like the first time I heard heard the whole concept of the reset button this time around. And when you say it, it's like, yeah, you know, they have hit the reset button. I'm stopping and thinking about, like, yeah, they have done it. But they haven't done it as blatant as they have in the past.
Well, I think they did it better than they've done it in the past. I think – I thought, like, you know, we kind of disagreed, but I thought last Raw was a pretty good Raw. And I thought that you had a bunch of these characters coming out of – you know, we did 2 weeks ago, we did the preview for I can't remember what that pay-per-view was. What was it?
Money in the Bank?
Was it Money? Yeah, okay. So we did the preview for Money in the Bank.
That's WWE programming to a T right there.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I feel like Michael Cole there. So then you asked...
Hello!
No, that's the King.
No, I'm doing the King.
Oh, yeah.
I'm doing the King to your
Michael Cole. Oh, yeah, right, Jerry. Right, yeah, that's what I meant. Right. So you kind of had... You asked me, like, okay, what percent does this guy have to win, and where does this guy go after the pay-per-view? And honestly, like, we really didn't give too many very good answers of what we thought. We had ideas of what we'd like to see coming out of the pay-per-view, but we didn't. Everything was so up in the air. And now they've kind of set down the groundwork. Okay, they got something for Bray Wyatt that's good. They were able to introduce Jericho through that, and also they're able to reintroduce The Miz through that as well. And then the directions that the Shield's going to go. I think they're playing Dean and Seth perfectly, right? Seth is going to have that, and like you would wonder, like, okay, well, this guy's going to look for the first chance to cash it in. But the idea that like Dean Ambrose is this psycho, and he's going to be there to make sure that he never cashes in, I think that's perfect. And you can drag that Money in the Bank out for an entire year if you want to, and have it still make sense logically. So I think like those two guys, the storylines go really well. I'm curious to see what happens with Swagger. I don't know if he can really succeed long term as a babyface, but for them to give the guy at least one chance in his career to be a babyface and see what he can do with it. I mean, I think physically him and Rusev is a really good matchup anyway. Cesaro, like now that that Intercontinental title is abandoned, I'm pretty sure Cesaro is going to win that Rumble or that Battle Royal. So that gives him some kind of direction. So they've really started over and given a lot of these good characters that you didn't know where they were heading an actual clear direction. And I think it makes the shows better.
Yeah, I think you pretty much, I don't know if I can comment on that. I mean, it's a good take of what you said, so I haven't, you kind of throw me for a loop, put me on the spot.
Having a good take threw you off?
Yeah, having a good take threw me off, yeah. You're directing the show over here. And that's kind of, I think that's kind of what it is. It's like this, there's not, like right now, like because we're talking about CM Punk and the possibility of him coming back, and I've already kind of resigned myself to the fact that CM Punk is not going to come back. And if there's like a glimmer of hope of him coming back, then, you know, that generally like piques my interest with it. But I don't know if I want him to come back. You know, it's like, it's funny. It's like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan carried WWE for the past 3 years. Or when I started watching it, those were the two guys that were carrying it. They're your two indie guys. And I just don't know if there's a place for that anymore. It's like, to be a WWE fan, it's like you're kind of resigning yourself to the fact that the guys that you like are never going to get their due. Ziggler being one of them, Sandow being one of them. It's just more of a case now where I feel like I'm kind of like a beaten fan. You know, it's like I'm never going to get what I want. You know, I want Ziggler to be a top player. I want Sandow to stop doing the garbage that he's doing. I just don't understand the direction of what Sandow is. Like, to me, it's like, when he comes out, I'm like, is he even Damien Sandow anymore? I mean, is he even his character? This is supposed to be like an enlightened character. He's supposed to be smarter than everybody else. But if you're that smart, why do you continually come out and be a fool? You know, the court jester for every Raw.
I'm not going to disagree with that, but I really did like his Vince McMahon.
I did like his Vince McMahon.
McMahon was awesome.
Yeah, and his
had the walk, had the voice.
His heart wasn't too bad either.
I haven't seen the Hart one yet, but
Bret
Hart, yeah. But he also did HBK on Main Event tonight.
Oh, did he?
I haven't seen that yet, but okay. I saw like a couple of pictures online.
Yeah, and so yeah, so I mean, that's pretty much where I'm at. It's like I'm not in this fever pitch to see CM Punk come back because I don't see CM Punk doing anything. I mean, what's going to be different with the role that he's going to do? I don't see him. Either you make this guy like a perennial champion and put him in the main events and have that go on, or just don't have him anymore. And just with the way what they're doing with everything is that he's not going to be one of these guys that's going to fight Cena. He's not going to fight Randy Orton. I just think he throws a big wrench into everything that WWE's trying to do because he has it. And that's really like a kind of a sad statement on WWE itself. It's like they're not going to push any guy that has the it factor. And I think they're happy that Daniel Bryan's hurt because then they don't have to deal with it anymore. It's easy for them to do programming without Daniel Bryan and CM Punk. And that's kind of where I'm at with the product right now. I mean, like you had mentioned last week that your son doesn't watch anymore because there's no CM Punk isn't there, Jericho wasn't there. Jericho, we know Jericho has no place to be a champion. You know, he can be the elder statesman and put people that deserve to be over. But I don't know. It's like there's no reason for me to watch. I mean, I watch it because I enjoy it. I mean, I look forward to watching Raw, but it's not with the same kind of interest that I had before. What, 3 years ago, or maybe even 2 years ago, when CM Punk was at the top of his game, Daniel Bryan had this great buzz about him. You know you're going to get a good match with that. Ziggler was doing well. Sandow was doing well with Cody Rhodes. It's just, you had a bunch of guys. You can even put Big E in that conversation too. You had a bunch of guys that really piqued your interest, but now it's just kind of like, you know, nothing's going to happen with these guys, and we're going to be force-fed with John Cena, And the only thing that makes it good to for me to watch is I watch like Bray. I'll watch the Wyatt family. I'll watch the Usos. I'll watch Roman Reigns. I really enjoy Roman Reigns. I'll watch Seth Rollins and I watch Dean Ambrose, and that's about it. There's nobody really else that really makes me come back and I'm like, oh, I gotta watch Raw. I mean, SmackDown's a whole different beast just because SmackDown will have good matches, and I enjoy the matches in SmackDown. I'm slowly starting to become like you, where it's like I appreciate a good match, but I want that character. I want that guy that kind of inspires me or makes me like a fan again.
I suppose, but I mean, you just went and listed like six guys you like to watch. That's basically the whole show right now. I mean, with they have your divas kind of garbage mixed in here and there, which is even actually watchable now that AJ's back, at least for me. But look, they've split up the Shield, which was, you know, we can question on whether they did it prematurely or whatnot. But they've put all three of those guys into now, they take up more of the show now as individuals. And I think that's good. Like, you know, a couple of weeks ago you're asking, like, what happened to the singles matches? Well, now that the Shield is wrestling in singles competition, pretty much every singles match they're in is a good damn match. So, like, you have that, like, you know, surrounding whatever happened with the Cena-Rollins match. The actual match was good. You had Ambrose in the match with Randy Orton. I thought that was a great match. Would Reigns, did he actually fight a match, or did he just fight somebody in the beginning of the show?
He fought Kane in the beginning of the show.
It was just a fight, though, right?
It was just a fight,
it was
yeah.
an actual match.
Yeah.
Okay, but still, like, moved the story, and it's fine for what it was. So it's like, they've taken and they spread him out, but I think you're getting that. Like, Dolph, yeah, you're right. He's not, I mean, he...
But to me, the Shield splitting up is just the same thing as watching Dolph Ziggler. It's like, I don't know if I'm being impatient. I just don't have any faith whatsoever that they're going to put the title on someone that I actually want to see. You know, it's like I wouldn't mind seeing the title on Seth. I wouldn't mind seeing the title on Roman Reigns. I wouldn't mind seeing the title on Randy Orton, because then at least you have a storyline that I can get behind, and that's a much better storyline. It's just when you have John Cena being the champion and you have to put up with his bullshit week in and week out, it's very boring to watch. And I'm sitting there going like, how many times does this guy have to be outshone every single Raw by someone else, and those guys that outshine John Cena have to play second fiddle to this guy? It's just boring. It's like, you know what? It's like, you know, I'm going to bring up old sports analogies, but it's like when NBC had the NBA and they showed the flipping Knicks every single Sunday, and the Knicks were so boring to watch and they had so much clout. But man, that team was, I mean, you're watching like an 83-81 game.
It was Knicks heat every single Sunday.
Yeah, and it was terrible. I mean, it's just, I mean, who the Heat have back? It doesn't even matter. The Heat weren't even a good team.
They were built just like the Knicks. No, they just went in slugfest, and, you know, exactly.
Yeah,
75-81 every single Sunday.
And that's pretty much what it is. It's like the main event should get you, like, the main event is something that you should be able to want to watch. And SmackDown always delivers on the main event because Cena's hardly ever there. And I enjoy SmackDown a lot more. I'm actually kind of sad that WWE main event went to WWE Network exclusively, because I just like watching WWE main event. I could see other people. I didn't have to deal with the John Cena factor the whole time. So that's kind of where I'm at with everything.
You have my network password, man.
I do.
You're free to use it whenever. So you know what the outline plan going forward is, right? What they have, like,
I probably fell asleep during that. So.
No, I mean, no, like the word backstage on how they've written through the next year. So tell me if you're okay with this then. So because you're wondering what's going to happen, right? So the way it's supposedly written out is that Cena will drop the belt around SummerSlam to Brock Lesnar. And then it's going to build to Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns at next WrestleMania.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah. So if that comes to fruition, like, I would assume that means Roman Reigns wins the Rumble and then goes on to beat, and that's his big moment, WrestleMania moment. Are you okay with that slow play if that's what the build is for? Because that, to me, that's a short title run for Cena, right? That's like a transitional title run to get it to Brock. What they do with Brock, who's a part-timer, having the belt for that long, I don't know. But I can deal with Cena.
That's like a whole other year, dude. I mean, you're like maybe 6-7 months. I don't know right now what I'm okay with. I mean, it's with Cena just being there. It's just like I shouldn't watch wrestling and fast forward whenever he's there. Yeah, and I've done this for the past 3 years, fast forwarding everything that he does, every promo that he does. I watch, you know, I will watch a match if I'm interested in who he's facing, but then I'm also like watching this match with a grain of salt because I know that the guy's going to outshine John Cena, and then Cena's going to come back at the end and do his crap moves, and then either there's going to be a run in or he's going to get the pin. It's just something that it's just something I don't want to see. I mean, and you know, I was saying like I don't want to see CM Punk and Daniel Bryan back in, on the WWE product, but at the same time, I think I kind of do, just because at least those guys were transcendent during the show, right? So you know, I do want CM Punk back, but at the same time, when I'm watching CM Punk, it's like, well, I know CM Punk is going to do anything because they want to push this guy or whatever it is. What I'm saying is like, if you're going to have Roman Reigns be the guy, then have him start winning, you know, and have him start facing like John Cena. Have John Cena do some of the work too. You know, it's like John Cena has put over Daniel Bryan, has put over CM Punk. I guess what I'm tired of the role of what John Cena is. I'm tired of the idea of what John Cena is, where...
Yep, that's well established.
Yeah, and but I'm getting tired of it. Yeah,
getting tired of it.
And it, that's the whole thing. I think what the whole problem is that Hulk Hogan had that role at the same time, too. It's like, well, I can watch a different product and watch wrestling the way I want to watch it. I can watch wrestling, I can watch WCW and see what wrestling should be about. There is no outlet for that anymore. I can't go to a different product. I'm forced to watch this product, and I'm getting tired of it.
Yeah, no, I understand. That's what we always say about how it really sucks that TNA is so bad, because it would be nice if that could be a show you could watch. I saw you had your little tweet earlier today. You don't know who the Wolves are. The Wolves are good, man. They're a really good tag team.
They're great.
You seen them?
No, but hey, they're great. They're awesome. I have no idea who they are. You know,
no, I'm telling you.
I know you do, but you know it doesn't mean anything. You know, because I don't watch the TNA product,
I'm not suggesting that you do now.
Okay,
but I'm just saying, like, because you kind of you threw the fahu at them.
Yeah,
and I'm just telling you those guys are legit. They're a good tag team.
Yeah, there's a lot of good tag teams around that I don't get to see. Yeah. You know, and so maybe I don't know. Maybe I watch the train wreck that's TNA just so when I start watching the WWE, I'm like, wow, what a great product for all this, you know?
Well, I'll say this for TNA. You can get through it in about 45 minutes.
Okay, and how long is the show? 3 hours?
2 hours.
Okay.
So you can get through it in about 45 minutes to 50 minutes.
Maybe I should watch TNA then. What channel is TNA on?
Spike.
Spike? So I can start wrestling. I can start recording. I can record it. Okay.
Thursday nights.
I'll start recording it. Maybe I'll like... I like the WWE product a little bit better.
Yeah.
Let me do this, and then you can get into something that you have for me. The worst segment on Raw was Fandango doing commentary. And if he would have coughed like you just did, it would have been a lot better. Here's my impersonation of Fandango on the mic. You ready? So they're talking. He's like, Fandango. I couldn't understand a thing this guy was saying. That's how he sounded. It's like, dude, can someone turn up this guy's mic or something? Because all I'm hearing is, it's like you know, it's they took a Led Zeppelin record for Stairway to Heaven and played it backwards and say how much they love the devil and stuff. I mean, I couldn't understand anything this guy was saying.
It wasn't even that he was mumbling. It's just he's trying way too hard to have the sexy raspy voice, right? And that's what it is. He's talking all quiet. And he's like, "Wow, Layla's a really nice woman." Like it's almost
that, at least I can understand you saying that. I couldn't understand anything this guy was saying.
No, it was bad. He had like zero personality.
No, I don't care about his personality. I couldn't understand anything he said. He has a mic, and I'm looking like, is that mic on? And the mic is right next to his mouth. I don't want to talk about his personality. I don't want to talk about what he was saying because I could not understand anything that he said at all.
I generally don't have a problem with that because he doesn't say anything worthwhile anyway. But my thing, I did agree. I thought that was the absolute worst segment. I thought he showed zero personality. I thought he was terrible. And then
I can't judge that because I couldn't hear anything that he said.
That doesn't make any sense.
I can't judge whether he had no personality or not because I couldn't hear anything that he said. And the guy was just like mumbling and stumbling the whole time. I can't judge whether he had no personality or not because in order to like to judge if someone has personality, generally you have to hear what they have to say. So if you're saying that since you couldn't understand what he was saying, hence he had no personality, then I'm on board with you on that. I can't judge whether he had no personality on that because I couldn't understand anything the guy said.
I don't think that follows at all. But,
it doesn't follow at all.
No, it doesn't. I can, regardless of what he had to say.
Are we arguing about me? I couldn't understand anything.
Well,
I'm saying you're. Well, when I'm saying I couldn't understand a word he was saying, I literally mean I did not hear anything that he said.
I understand that, but I don't see how that precludes you from watching what he's doing and realizing that he has no personality.
I'm not talking about watching what he was doing. I was talking about I'm trying to hear this guy on the mic, and I can't understand anything he's saying. I don't care about the dancing or whatever it was.
All right, so so let's move on then. What are we talking about this for?
Dude, I will take you outside right now.
What are we talking about? Oh, it doesn't make any... Which, it's just dull what you're saying. It doesn't make any sense.
It's not dull what I'm saying.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. Because I can't even comment on whether he had a personality or not because usually you'd have to like hear what a guy said to say it. I couldn't understand anything that
not
he said.
Not really. I didn't know a word he said either, and I was pretty able to figure out that he was a flat line out there on the microphone.
Okay.
And I didn't need to understand a single word or not. It was
okay. Then
it
was say quite that.
I just said it about three times now.
No, that's the first time you said it. Don't get your panties all in a bunch, dude. All
right, you're talking crazy over there.
Is it just dull what I'm saying?
It is.
am I your strong pen to your Khalil's way or what?
I'm saying what you're saying didn't follow logically. That's all I was saying.
Man, fuck you.
But it makes sense because then to further the illogical followings, he stood up on a table. And somehow Dolph was entranced to stare at him, and then all of a sudden forget he was in a match, which is, once again, wrestling logic. So it all goes hand in hand.
And then the other one, the close second for the whole Raw was the big Funkadactyl breakup, where there was like 15 botches in that whole thing, and you just have like where's the mud at? Because it's like watching the Stripes during the mud wrestling scene, where you have just like a bunch of ladies rolling around in the mud. They botched like three or four moves that they wanted to do. And it just became like a roll around on the mat fest.
I was just wondering when the weave was coming off.
which ones?
Yeah, didn't matter. one of the three on Cameron. It's like looked like Naomi had a pretty good handful of that hair. I couldn't believe that thing wasn't coming out. But yeah, that was terrible. And I actually watched. I wanted to watch the segment just to see like if they could at least do the breakup well because I had read ahead of time that it was going to happen. And nah, it was terrible.
You didn't see it coming. You had to read to realize that.
No, I knew it was coming, okay. But then I just because I got the West Coast. So do I. So yeah, so sometimes I'm scrolling through my timeline and I find out, oh, you know, this is going to happen. So I mean, I'm going to watch the match anyway because AJ's in it. But in general, if I didn't know the breakup was going to happen as soon as the match was over, I would have fast forward to the next thing. But I was like, okay, let me see how they break up. And yeah, it was terrible. I watched about half of it, and then I just said, no, "This is nothing's going to happen here." And
the only thing I have to say about it is that's all I got to say about that.
The album streets.
The name
of the album is
Alpha for a second. So the big news that came out.
Wait, no, and I
tweeted you, and you never responded.
No, because that's not big news.
It is big news.
Let me go back.
How far are you going to go back?
Way back.
Does it go a little something like this? Hit it?
Yeah. So you were mentioning before really quickly how, and this was kind of in your John Cena tirade.
It wasn't a tirade.
It was acceptable.
It was more like that.
And saying how you'd rather see the belts on Orton. So on some of these websites, I guess they referenced, there's a Forbes magazine did a study on best for business. And it actually indicated that over the last, like, since 2009, pretty much every time except for once, every John Cena title reign except for once coincided with a down in WWE's revenue. And every time that Orton had the belt, revenue was actually up. And I just thought that was quite interesting for them to kind of hang their hat so hard on this is best for business and this and that. that that actually financially they're doing worse over the last, what is that now, 5 years when John Cena has the belt. And Orton was the guy that actually made the revenue go on an uptick. And it's a, you know, it's not completely like, you know, you could trust it 100%. It's a, like, because like on CM Punk's reign, it was kind of up and down. But I just thought it was very interesting. It seemed pretty consistent that over these last 5 years, when Cena gets the belt, that they actually are doing worse for business. So, I don't know. I just thought that was a kind of an interesting story out of Forbes. And I thought, I don't know, maybe you might have a... I was curious what you thought about that.
Well, if you want to hear my how I feel about that, go back 20 minutes to when I was doing my tirade. And it's pretty much because... there's nothing. I mean, when Randy Orton's the champion, new things can happen. You can he faces people that, like, you know, Daniel Bryan has a lot to do with that too, because he's facing Daniel Bryan. They had good heat going here and there with that. When it comes to John Cena, it's like he can't work a program with anybody. He can't, you know, there's no build up for any of his matches for a pay per view. He doesn't generate buzz. He doesn't generate revenue. It's just like, I don't. Well, I mean, what do you? I mean, I go back 20 minutes to, or 30 minutes to what I was saying. It's like, it's more of the same, and the same is no new star ever happens when you face John Cena. And it's like, you know, it's, we can say that John Cena doesn't put anybody over. Well, it's not a case of him putting anybody over. It's like the people that he loses to, like you have said many times in the past, is that these guys are already over. And they're already established, and they're given their just due when they beat Cena. Cena doesn't make new stars out of anybody, and this all goes back to the same thing with the whole Roman Reigns thing. It's like, you disagree with me where I'm saying that Roman Reigns gave John Cena the rub. Roman Reigns did give John Cena the rub.
I didn't disagree with that.
You said you didn't.
And I said that I thought that I didn't think that the end segment was a total waste, because that. I just like the way...
Did you want to fight right now, Dean? I mean...
I didn't. If we got to.
If we got to, we got to.
We gotta go.
I'll put you in an armbar, Dean.
All right, Rousey.
single leg takedown.
Single leg armbar.
Into an armbar. Okay, so...
La plancha.
The suicide La plancha. Double twist La plancha off the top rope. So what do you want to get into?
You wanted to talk about the farewell to one Santino, I believe.
So. Yeah. So how do you feel about that? Your boy Santino's gone, dude. So it looks like he's been replaced with Damian Sandow. So I think they're going to be okay.
At least Sandow has the ability to be funny. So I'd much rather I will watch a Sandow segment. And I'm sorry, I apologize to you ahead of time, because I know that's not doing anything to help the guy. But I would still watch Sandow, because I like Sandow. And he can be funny. I thought his Vince was great. I thought his Bret Hart stuff was good. Wasn't really into the Davy Crockett or whatever it was the previous week. But if they have to have a guy that's doing a comedy shtick, I'd rather have it be anybody than Santino, because Santino's not entertaining in the least. I'm going to be cautiously optimistic, because my fear is if he's retiring because he can't wrestle, well, fuck, the dude never wrestled anyway. So it gives me this concern that WWE is going to try to bring him back as like some interview guy or just some promo guy or some guy to pimp product like he was doing with the Mike's Hard Liquor or whatever it was. But I don't wish like bad health and ill will towards any of these guys, because, I mean, I don't know him as a guy.
Are we going to put him in the Hall of Cafe?
But I don't want to see him on TV. I mean, that's... The rule still holds true. If he shows up on my TV, I will hit the fast forward.
And you're not gonna. And you're doing it the right way, because you're not throwing your remote at the TV because Santino's on. You're just gonna fast forward the guy. Yeah. So you've kind of brought up Swagger a little bit. We kind of have this whole thing with Kofi and Big E possibly teaming up or being a tag team, whatever it is. Where are you with Swagger, and where are you with Swagger with what are that dude's name?
Zeb?
Yeah. All right. Where are you at with this guy right now? I mean, it just seems like he's just kind of more tailor-made for this feud with Rusev. And then once that feud's done, then he's done as well.
Yeah, it would seem that Swagger would have a hard time being a babyface long-term. Seems like it's something that maybe just for this feud. But I'm fine with it, because I like watching Swagger work. So I'd like to see the guy get a chance to do something, and I like watching Rusev. So if they have a good feud, then I'll be fine with it. But I don't see this like being the launching pad for this big run that Jack Swagger is going to go on as a babyface. I highly doubt that that's going to happen.
Is Rusev kind of pigeonholed to who he is now? I mean, it's real easy to pin the Russian tag on him, but long term, it just seems to me like he's kind of like another reincarnation of Big E. You know, it's like a big guy that makes a big splash with kind of being overpowering in the ring, and then once they have no use for him, then he's kind of, it's like, what do we do with this guy?
I fear that down the line he becomes like, do you remember Vladimir Kozlov at all?
Yes.
Like Kozlov or like Brodus Clay. They're going to use him as this monster, and they're going to get whatever mileage they can out of his original push, and then once they realize they're not going to push him any farther, then they're not going to know what to do, and the guy's going to come out dancing. That's pretty much my prediction on what they're going to do with Rusev.
Well, I mean, he's shown that he could probably have some dancing skills, you know, with kind of the whole Muay Thai stuff he does in the beginning. So
he's super athletic, man. He is.
He's going to do the Rusev shuffle. He could do a rap, too, you know, do the Rusev rap or whatever. Kind of like Iron Sheik did in that one video with AWA. You never heard of it, huh?
No.
Okay, yeah, that's something you gotta listen to.
I would at some point. See, what I would do at some point is, and I'm going video game theory here, but I would make some kind of alignment of the European wrestlers. So it's like Rusev, I think, is very good, but he's going to have the same problem that Ryback had, in that he's never going to be able to cut a promo. So you need to have a real mouthpiece with him. And Lana is fine for now, but that's not going to last long term. But at some point, if you get him as kind of like, maybe you put him and Barrett, like the muscle for Barrett. And I mean, I don't know how long Cesaro is going to be lasting with Heyman. But maybe you get a few of these guys together, and they can get together. Prince Devitt coming soon. Maybe you get a group like that where Rusev can really be the muscle of a group, like the way they should have played Ryback. And that's probably going to be the best way to go, because I don't think he's ever going to be able to cut a promo. But I think the guy's a good worker.
Yeah, I don't agree. I don't agree with the whole European faction. I don't personally like that idea, but it does kind of lead to another point. Like WWE was really kind of, they had two major factions in their, you know, in WWE with the Wyatt family and with the Shield. Are they hurting now just with just one faction with the Wyatt family, or do they need like kind of like another faction to do something?
Well, I think they have two factions. I think the authority is still generally one, but yeah, they're hurting with not having a babyface faction. I don't think they're hurting right now, but as time goes on, I think not having a babyface faction.
Well, granted, the other faction they have in the Wyatt family, they're pretty much a babyface faction anyways. So, I mean, they were getting a lot of cheers when they beat the Usos, and I don't know if that's because of Canada, but I think that's pretty much throughout. I think people like the Wyatts.
But they're always going to work as heels, right? I mean, I'm talking about a faction to work as babyface. I think they're going to need to come up with something at some point.
Has there ever been a good babyface faction? Like, maybe DX is like the best babyface faction ever?
Horsemen?
Well, the problem with the Horsemen was that they were baby faces against NWO, but they got their ass kicked so many times that it didn't matter if they got over or not. I mean, they always got squashed.
But they were a pretty good baby face faction, and like the Malenko Benoit incarnation, they were really over as baby. I mean, they're always over, but they were really over as baby face. They're good heat, as baby faces.
But I don't know if you ever had like a successful like babyface faction that had titles and always had the upper hand. I think DX was the only faction that ever really kind of did that.
Shield. Well, I guess when they had titles, I guess they were heels.
There are heels there. So yeah.
Dungeon of Doom.
Dungeon of Doom. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. The Filthy Animals, dude. Oh, the Radicals.
The Radicals. Yeah, yeah. They were hot. Yeah.
Not Radical.
They were good. They were good, but I mean, it only lasts like what, 3-4 months?
I guess. Well, I guess they were kind of heels anyway, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that doesn't count. So
the two-man power trip.
They are heels, too.
All right, so we're getting to an hour. This is kind of like a lull show that we're doing. You know, it's kind of, you know, there's Raw was fun to watch. I enjoyed Raw. the last Raw, kind of looking back on and kind of thinking about for a second, you know, was a good Raw. So they've had two good programmings for the past 2 weeks.
Let me ask you this, because this is kind of something I was thinking about, and then read something that JR had Twittered within the last day or so. And what do you think? How do you think the show was or wasn't affected by not having Triple H and Stephanie out there yesterday? Do you think it was smoother? Do you think it was missing anything? What do you think about them and the job they're doing?
I don't think they really add anything to the show. I mean, it's because it's been force fed, and the whole thing is you have these two people come out and say that, you know, this is what's best for business, blah blah blah. It's been the same thing over and over and over again. And when I go into Raw, I'm literally trying to stay up and watch it and see if they're. I'm waiting for like Wyatt to see the Wyatts. I'll watch what Roman Reigns does. It's. I don't know if you can ask me that question because I don't watch it linear. You know, I'll fast forward stuff. And when Triple H and Stephanie McMahon come out, that's a fast forward. You know, when John Cena comes out, that's a fast forward. You know, I'll fast forward a lot of things because I just don't care. And that's kind of where my frustration comes from.
So, well, there's your answer right there.
Yeah.
They're an automatic fast forward for you.
But maybe I didn't fast forward as much. I don't think I really fast forwarded any parts of Raw this time around. And maybe that's a good thing. I don't know if I fast forwarded anything. I think this is one of the first times I didn't fast forward anything. Now, there's some kind of lapses here and there where I remember seeing Stardust and Goldust. Did they wrestle? Or did they just do the promo? See, that's what Raw is now. You have to sit there and think about it. And so do I, you know?
I think they did wrestle.
Who did they wrestle? I don't think they did.
Did they go right back again? I don't know. I've seen them fight right back so much. And I just automatically assume there's going to be a Goldust and Stardust right back match every time.
Wrestling now is you have to watch... for certain spots, right? I mean, not to take anything from Raw, but I mean, Usos versus the Wyatt family was great. I mean, that's one of the best matches I've seen in a long time on TV. And just with the way the fans were reacting, the matches themselves, like I'm sitting there going, like, who's going to win this match? You know, and that was a very fun match to watch. Waiting for Chris Jericho to come out and cut off The Miz. Very fun to watch. So I didn't do a lot of fast-forwarding. I fast-forwarded John Cena when he was talking. I fast-forwarded his entrance. So there's certain people that you fast-forward all the time, so maybe it was smoother because I didn't have to hear the same old spiel over and over again. Maybe they are better. You know, maybe it's better without them. I mean, I think, you know, Orton has a lot more to him when he doesn't have the crutch of those two kind of talking about him, where he doesn't have to deal with that kind of aspect of the whole storyline. There's a lot of small things I liked. I liked when Seth was in trouble. I liked how Randy Orton came out. I liked how Kane came out. I liked the whole thing. What Randy Orton was doing was trying to set up John Cena for the RKO, and he ends up RKOing. Maybe he did RKO Cena. I don't know. I like seeing Fit Finley come out.
That was it. Fit got speared.
Yeah. And there's a guy next to him, too. I was trying to figure out who the other guy was. But I kind of like how Fit pushed Roman Reigns while they're holding him back, and then Fit just, like, pops him in the face, and, like, Roman's like, okay. You know, so maybe it was a lot smoother, but, you know, at the same time, it's like there's not enough. The storytelling is not enough where you're watching every segment and going, okay, you know. Everything's on all cylinders. And this is what's missing. Like, WCW, during the Attitude Era, you didn't fast-forward a lot of stuff. Raw, you didn't really fast-forward either during the Attitude Era because everybody had their own gimmicks. They all knew how to work. They, you know, and it was kind of more like you either sink or swim during that time. And now there's no sink or swim, so now they can just kind of rest on their laurels and not try to improve the product. So to me, it's never going to be smooth. Because there isn't that competition there. There is no sink or swim. They can do whatever they want. And I think that's more the problem that I have with anything right now. But I still look forward to watching Monday Night Raw.
All right.
So, there we go. So, yay wrestling. Yay WWE. You know, but something has to change, dude. And the two guys that I think can make a change in CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, I don't think they're ever going to get the run, a deserved run that they should have.
I think they will, but I think it's going to take time.
Yeah. And the only time it's going to happen is that Cena has to play the back seat, and Cena cannot play the back seat. I mean, this whole title reign that he has right now with the two belts, we called this out, saying that he needs to be a double champion. But the guy, he can't even lift the belts over his head without hitting him in the, without the belt strap hitting him in the face and look like an idiot. I look at small things like that, and it's just like, even like his picture, that they have. I mean, he just looks like, I'm like, why do you like this guy? The guy looks like Fred Flintstone, He's like a Cro-Magnon, he has like a stone Cro-Magnon face. He looks like a flippin' idiot.
Looks more like Barney.
Barney? Barney Rubble, yeah. Yeah.
A taller Barney.
But at least Barney was good on the mic.
At least Barney pulled a hose.
Yeah. Betty was hot, dude.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into segment time right now. I got a guy for Hall of Kayfabe, if you don't have one that's outstanding or that you want to, push right now.
Your guy's outstanding?
No, he's not outstanding, but I'm just saying, like, if it's not a guy that you really want to get in at this particular time. I have a guy I think that's deserved to get in, and we could have a nice little segment. But if you have a guy that you think that is going to be...
I got two guys. I had one guy in mind for a couple of days, and then I was looking through some stuff, and I came up with another guy today. But neither one of them... I mean, I think both of them deserve to be there. But it's up to you if you want to... Because I've done the last couple.
Okay.
So if you want to throw your guy in, you can. If not, I'll throw a guy.
So this guy has his own... He'll probably have his own wing, just like Jesse has his own wing in the Hall of Kayfabe. But the guy I want to put in there, and I've watched this guy, back in like 1987 or 88, and I always thought he was a good performer.
I know who you're talking
about. I don't think you do. The guy I want to put in is Teddy Long.
Okay.
Okay.
I thought you were going Slick, but okay.
No, that's. I think we did put Slickster in, didn't we?
I think he got a golden stick.
He got a golden stick. Okay. No, but I want to put Teddy Long in because a lot of people don't realize that he was a referee long before he did any type of general manager or anything like that. I just thought, him as a ref, he's like when he would get hurt and stuff, like he could really sell it. And I just remember he had these Jerry curls and stuff or whatever, like this, back when he was a ref in NWA WCW. But then he really kind of turned his character around. I mean, he kind of became a parody of kind of the whole player thing and stuff and everything like that. But and I know for a while you thought that he wasn't that good on the mic, but he was so bad on the mic, when he was in that role that it actually kind of endeared yourself to him. You know what I'm saying? And it's like you knew what you were getting out of him. I just really enjoyed everything that he did, especially like toward the tail end of his career with WWE, with John Laurinaitis there, kind of kissing up to John Laurinaitis. The stuff that he did with Eve was really good, and then the stuff with Booker T. And there were storylines there that could have developed. And then when Booker T. kind of left from that aspect of the show, Teddy left from that aspect of the show too. I thought for a while he really carried SmackDown for a long time, and I think he's very deserving to be in the Hall of Kayfabe.
Yeah, I thought he was a much better general manager than Vicky, right? Like, I could actually watch him do his promos and do his little corny dance and stuff like that.
That was a tight dance, dude. Yeah, there you go.
Call everybody player and stuff like that. And yeah, I thought he worked really well with
him. And he was the king of tag team wrestling,
Yeah, that's what they always... That's all the internet running joke, right? Like, whenever they make a thrown together tag team match, like, oh, is Teddy Long still booking? but those tag matches are usually pretty good, so... Like, I don't know. I hope people are just kind of making a joke because I thought most of the matches that he put together usually were pretty good.
Yeah.
I do remember watching him as a referee in WCW. Right. I never saw any NWA, but I remember seeing him there. And then I thought it was funny. Like I recognized him when he ended up over in WWE. I'm like, wait, wasn't that the ref? And then he was a manager too, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't he a manager for a while?
For a little bit.
Who did he manage?
I don't know what he did, but and that's kind of how he transitioned to the role of being a general manager. But yeah. He might have...
He didn't manage Doom, right?
No, you know who he managed? I think he managed Too Cold Scorpio and Buff Bagwell. I think that was one of the tag teams that he managed. And this is before the whole American Males, the epic American Males.
Too Cold Scorpio.
Yeah.
Flash Funk.
Flash Funk. Yeah, I think
with the Funkadactyls.
Yeah, and they were a pretty decent tag team. They were a fun tag team to watch. Too Cold Scorpio you know, you want to talk about a guy putting a Hall of Kayfabe. You know, this guy, he was a good performer, and Buff at that time was very athletic, and he, you know, he was still young and could do all, you know, was a good work in the ring. And I think Teddy did do those two guys, but you know, Teddy was good entertainment. You know, I like, and I wouldn't fast forward him when he came out.
Yeah.
Where you have all these other people like Triple H and Stephanie McMahon who are supposedly bigger, you know, in the business of wrestling, but Teddy, you know, Teddy, he'd get on the mic and you listen to what he had to say. You'd laugh at it and kind of roll your eyes sometimes, but hey, you know, he made you sit there and watch it, you know?
Yeah, no, I like Teddy. I got no problem. I was fine with, that was one of the guys that maybe of that list on the, whatever it was, Black Thursday, 11 guys let go. He was maybe like second or third down on the list of guys I didn't want to see go. Most of those guys, I was like, whatever, right? But like Teddy, I would have liked to have seen Teddy be able to stick.
Play it. Okay. All right. So holla. So now we have a match, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have a match?
I can have a
match. I like it when you're on vacation because now you have all these matches. Is it a match that I've seen?
Maybe.
Okay.
So one of the, you know, on the network they have like the different, you can look at things by show. And so they just recently have put up all the Saturday night's main events. So I went back and I was looking for Saturday night's main event. And I found one, which was, it was Ricky Steamboat against Jake the Snake, where Jake had the snake. And see, I always remember Ricky bringing a Komodo dragon, but it was actually like a fucking caiman or like a baby alligator.
Okay.
So I don't know if he did both, because in my mind I remember the Komodo dragon in a cage.
Yeah.
He came out with a bag, and Jesse did the what's in the bag line, by the way. But he had a bag, like a gigantic bag.
Whoa, what's in the bag?
He brought out a...
Mayor. No,
it's McMahon that did
that. Yeah, okay.
And then...
well, I could do that too. What's in the bag, Jesse?
Yes, and that's exactly what he did. But it was like an alligator or something, right? So, at any rate, I went... That was... When I saw that, I was like, okay, I want to watch this match. But let me run down the full card, and then I'll pick one match, because the match that I want to talk about isn't the one initially that I thought I would.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, so the first match was Hogan versus Orndorff, which was all right. Wasn't a great match, to be honest. Then the second match was that Ricky Steamboat versus Jake the Snake. I don't know what the third match is. It doesn't matter. But the main event, or the big match, was British Bulldogs against... I guess they're called the Dream Team. Was it when Valiant was? It was Johnny Valiant was the manager for Beefcake and Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Yeah.
Dream Team, right?
Uh-huh.
So they had a best out of three falls. European rules is what they were calling it for the tag team titles. And this is a pretty good match. It was funny, dude. That I haven't watched an old British Bulldogs match in so long. I had forgotten what Davey Boy looked like before he got all roided out. And honestly, I kind of forgot what Beefcake looked like before he got all raided out too, because he was yoked up, but he was pretty slim. But it was a pretty good match. It was about 30 minutes, and it's like all the good spots, all the Greg Hammer just working a leg like for about 15 minutes.
Did he do where he got hit and then like walked a couple? Did he do the Ric Flair face first plant?
Not the face first plant, but he did one of the delayed reaction falls. But yeah, like Greg Hammer was good. He was doing all like the spots that you'd think Greg the Hammer would do. It was like just perfect old school like tag team wrestling, in that and Bruce Beefcake would kind of run in and just run across the ring and like hit Davey Boy. So then Davey Boy tried to get in the ring and the referee has to stop him, and then they go double team.
Wait, he hit real soft.
And then he hit real hard. But the thing that I thought was really good is the thing. And we talked about this like months ago. We had like what are the spots that you absolutely hate in wrestling? And it's the one I hate in tag team is like the heel runs over and hits the baby face that's on the apron. Let me start over. The baby face makes a tag and the referee isn't looking, so he runs over to stop the guy, and then while he's stopping the baby face team, the heel team just switches, and then he turns around and just slaps his hands together like, oh, there must have been a tag.
Yeah.
But every time when Beefcake would come over and hit Davey Boy, and then the ref would come try to hold Davey Boy back, like Beefcake and Valentine would do a double team, but they wouldn't switch partners. Like the right guy would go back out. They were just double teaming all the time. That was really good. There's a pretty good spot was where and it was actually good wrestling logic was the second fall, because the first fall was Valentine got a figure four, and then the second one like Beefcake kept interfering, so like Davey Boy pretty much put him in a fireman's carriage, and then he backed to his corner and Dynamite tagged himself in, and then he basically did like he climbed the top rope and he jumped onto like Beefcake's back and then jumped off for the flying headbutt, and Davey Boy held him so Beefcake couldn't make the save. Like, I thought that was some really good wrestling logic. Like, you know, he actually held the guy so he couldn't make a save, which you don't always see. Like, the guy just dips, and then you never see him again these days. So the match was actually pretty good. It was a good old-school, like, wrestling match. Do you remember watching this match at all?
I never watched that match, but I've seen plenty of Bulldog matches, and I've seen plenty of Dream Team matches, and I've seen plenty of Greg the Hammer Valentine matches to, excuse me, to know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, and that's kind of like, you know, we always kind of like to think of the old days and stuff in wrestling where everything was good. Well, I mean, this is where it's actually true to form, because I even remember like watching the Dream Team, I think like it was like WrestleMania 2 or something like that, and going like, oh man, I don't want to watch this. It's like, oh, it's Greg the Hammer Valentine. I'm like, come on, man, there's so many better guys that I want to see. But then watching this Dream Team match and just coming away from going like, wow, that was great storytelling in the ring. And it's really tag team wrestling is good right now. I mean, it's fun to watch, but in no way does it compare to any of the old tag team matches in the mid 80s or early 80s, and even to like the early 90s. I mean, the whole, you had tag team specialists, and that's all they did was just do tag teams, and that's how they made their money. And so they perfected that craft. Now it's like you don't have tag team specialists anymore. I mean, you can call like the Usos tag team specialists, but they would get slaughtered back then just with the way the storytelling was. Storytelling for tag team wrestling was way better than it is now.
That's true, but I think the Usos, I think they could fit in pretty well in that. I think they are actually a real team. But what you're kind of referring to is like the throwing together of teams like Ryback, or like potentially just Kofi Kingston,
or just a case where when they have a match and then like the last like 2 minutes, which is fun to watch, is just high spot after high spot.
Like, so for me, the difference between like the tag teams today and back then is, like you're saying, back then these tag teams, that was what they did. They came through whatever territories as a team. They went from place to place and they honed their craft. Today is like, if you got two guys that have failed as single stars and you don't know what to do with them, let's make a tag team. And that's where the difference, I think, lies. And that's why I think the Usos, I think to their credit, I think they could have done well in that era, because they are a team that I think that's all they want to do. I don't think either one of them has any aspiration to make some big solo career. I think they want to just be tag team wrestlers, and I think it shows in their work.
I think there should be other teams that should be like that too. I mean, I want to see other teams that want to be like the Usos in terms of let's just do tag team. And I really think kind of what set that all apart was really kind of the whole Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty thing, because people saw like Shawn Michaels really took off after he stopped being the Rockers, and that's kind of been the framework from here on out. But I miss the Arn Andersons, you know, that pride themselves on being great tag team wrestlers. I miss those type of matches where you have two teams that are so good at tag team wrestling that they can just tell different stories or have little nuances like you're saying, and that the logic behind it. There's no logic behind tag team wrestling anymore. And it is like the high spot after high spot. But whenever you do have the Usos, and that's why I kind of go back to the Wyatt family as well, that match had a lot of drama in it and had a lot of good storytelling. But it's not the same. You know, I think like the high impact moves at the same time kind of take away, like even like with the Wyatt family and the Uso matches, like, you know, you have like the two super kicks, you know, they're going to dive out of the ring. You know, you're going to get some high spots. What I really like is kind of like the flash move, like, that Harper did, you know, like that clothesline can come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And when he hits it, it's really good.
The big boot.
Yeah. And even like his powerbomb that he did was kind of reminiscent of Jinsei Shinzaki, you know, like his
seated power,
yeah,
powerbomb.
His powerbomb where he kind of prays before he does it and stuff. So, yeah, no, I mean, if you're watching the WWE Network for that, dude, I mean, and you're able to see that stuff, it's sad that most people probably won't see that. They'll look at the big names like Hogan versus Orndorff, or, you know, when you first said Jake the Snake versus Rick the Dragon Steamboat with the two flipping animals, I'm like, really, dude? We got to talk about that? Because that's not even when Steamboat was good. That's when he was starting to kind of get into this whole little gimmick thing with WWE. Yeah, and I just kind of find it funny that they're offering it for free again. I just don't know why the WWE Network isn't taking off like it should. Because just on that alone, and it's... I think it's more of a case where if the WWE Network was a chance to see, like, this old-time wrestling, they put an emphasis on that. Like, I like that they came out with the Saturday Night Main Event, but I think they're pushing it for, like, more of the pay-per-views, which is nice, but it's like, dude, there's so much history with these old matches. And, you know, you bring up the Dream Team, and it's like, that's not a group that I think of. But the second you say them, I'm like, oh, yeah, Beefcake and Valentine. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember them as a team, but then I remember all the stuff that Beefcake did in WWF. And then I remember Saturday mornings, Valentine was on every single morning. And the first time you see Valentine, you're like, dude, I'm like, oh, dude, this guy sucks. You know, he looks terrible. He doesn't have that 1980s Van Damme body that everybody in Schwarzenegger. He doesn't have that type of build. But then after like the second or third week, I'm kind of sitting there going like, oh, good, you know, Valentine's on, dude. It's like, now I know I'm going to watch like a good methodical match, even though
a proper match.
Yeah, even though he was facing enhancement talent at the time. It's like, I actually started like liking the guy, and I think I remember telling him when we were like 8 or 9. I'm like, dude, I'm like, Valentine's kind of fun to watch, dude. Yeah, and you kind of.
I just like. I think it's because he played soccer, but I like the shin guard gimmick, man. Yeah. I just thought that was a great gimmick. Speaking of guys that have like a really crappy look from the 80s, another guy that made an appearance on that show on a run in after Orndorff and Hogan was Adrian Adonis came out of nowhere.
Yeah. You were the big fan of Adrian Adonis.
How was I a fan of Adrian Adonis, dude?
No, you respect the guy. Because I remember I would start like making fun of him, and you're like, no, this is a good match. Because the only match that we saw was the.
Him and Roddy Piper.
It was the haircut match, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember like.
I was not a fan of Adrian Adonis. I thought he had a terrible look, and I really couldn't get over it. And I didn't understand the whole androgynous thing at the time. I just thought dude was weird. But like, kind of now looking back, it's like that guy for as fat and sloppy and out of shape as he was, the guy could kind of work.
The guy could work. And I think that's what you told me one time was like, because I was like, man, I don't want to see this match. You know, it's the Roddy Piper match. It's funny, I didn't like Roddy Piper back then. And I remember you're like, no, let's watch the match because it's pretty good. I'm like, man, screw this. I don't want to watch this. And then I started watching. I'm like, well, this is good storytelling.
Well, I thought Beefcake really made that match. Like, the storytelling was pretty good, but the way Beefcake came in and how that... I think that was what I wanted to see more than anything because I was a pretty big Beefcake fan.
As was I.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're going to get into Golden Stick. So I have... I have another audio recording that you can listen to.
Is it Eric Snow?
It isn't Eric Snow. Okay. I was trying to stay awake.
Is it Allen Iverson?
No.
Practice?
No, just wait, dude. Chill. Just chill for a second, dude.
First of all, I would like to thank the many, many fans throughout this country that wrote cards and letters just to wrote the American Dream while I was down. Secondly, I want to thank Jim Crockett Promotions for waiting and taking the time because I know how important it was. Starrcade 85 it is to the wrestling fans, it is to Jim Crockett Promotions. And Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, with that weight, got what I wanted. Ric Flair, the world's heavyweight champion. I don't have to say a lot more about the way I feel about Ric Flair. No respect, no honor. There is no honor among thieves in the first place. He put hard times on Dusty Rhodes and his family. You don't know what hard times are, Daddy. Hard times are when the textile workers around this country are out of work. They got 4 or 5 kids and can't pay their wages, can't buy their food. Hard times are when the auto workers are out of work and they tell them go home. And hard times are when a man has worked at a job 30 years. 30 years. They give him a watch, kick him in the butt, and say, hey, a computer took your place, Daddy. That's hard times. That's hard times. And Ric Flair, You put hard times on this country by taking Dusty Rhodes out. That's hard time. And we all had hard times together. I admit I don't look like the athlete of the day supposed to look. My bed is just a little big. My heart is just a little big. But brother, I am bad and they know I'm bad. And there were two bad people. One was John Wayne and he's dead, brother. And the other one's right here. Meet your boy Ric Flair. The world's heavyweight title belongs to these people. I'm going to reach out right now. I want you at home to know my hand is touching your hand for this gathering of the biggest body of people in this country, in this universe, all over the world. Now, reach it out because the love that was given me, and this time, I will repay you now because I will be the next world's heavyweight champion of this hard time blues. Dusty Rhodes Tour 85 and Ric Flair Nature Boy. Let me leave you with this. One way to hurt Ric Flair is to take what he cherishes more than anything in the world. That's the world's heavyweight title. I'm gonna take it. I've been there twice. This time when I take it, Daddy, I'm going to take it for you. Let's gather for it. Don't let me down now, because I came back for you, for that man up there that died 10, 12 years ago and never got the opportunity to see a real world champion. And I'm proud of you. Thank God I have you. And I love you. Love you!
So what do you think? You remember that promo? You've always heard about it, right?
I've heard it. We talked about it before. I don't think it got a golden stick, but I was talking about it when the time Austin had Dusty on his show. They were spent a lot of time talking about that promo. It's a really good promo. Dusty's kind of one of these guys that just like the way he talks, like whatever he's saying, like it ends up sounding like a good promo, even if he's mumbling like Fandango and I don't know what word that he's saying, like his promo is still going to come off sounding good because he's just a good public speaker, really. But yeah, I mean, I think it's good. It's really good. It fit that region. Like that's your regional wrestling, and that's like fit the times and the region, you know, that isn't doing economically well. And that's like Dusty was like, you know, that he was the common man, and that's exactly the kind of promo that he'd be cutting. I mean, it's like very fitting of what he is.
It's dated now. Yeah, it's a dated promo, but
yes and no. But I mean, because like, look at what the like. If someone were to come out and cut that promo today, it would resonate with a lot of people, I think.
And see, you know, and that's you know, it's funny because you know we spent the first part of the podcast just kind of talking, and we even bring up, you know, Triple H and Stephanie McMahon and all that stuff and everything at the same time. But, you know, promos now, it's not anybody's time to shine. And this is like a promo that just literally like comes out of nowhere, you know, he's able to talk about things that everybody's feeling at that time or facing at that time. Because when he cut that promo, I mean, business was down, dude. I mean, not wrestling wise, but just in general, like there was, you know, there was no inspiration with anything. And that, to me, that's what, like, wrestling really should be about, is, like, inspiring you or, like, to...
Well, that's what John Cena does every day.
Yeah.
Because he tells me.
Because of the hustle, loyalty, and... No, but you know what I mean? It's like, you know, wrestling is a thing where you can lose yourself for, like, 2 hours. You know, you don't have to worry about, you know, your bills or worry about having to go into work at 6 o'clock the next morning. It's like, you have, like, 2 hours or, like, an hour or an hour and a half where you can just lose yourself and just relax. And all these guys, like, in this WCW, it's like, you know, you had the whole Ric Flair stick of him being better than everybody else, you know, being the richest guy, and that's why he was such a monster heel, was because he had stuff that people didn't have. And it's funny because Dusty was doing very well for himself financially as well, but he was able to connect to, you know, those people his audience that he was talking about. And it's kind of like the same thing with, like, you know, we were talking about Adrian Adonis at the same time too. It's like Adrian Adonis was able to connect in some type of way. You know, these old time workers were able to connect to someone and made you watch. And all of these guys with the promos they cut, like you can go to any old NWA show and just watch promos the whole time because they work really well, unless your name is Magnum TA, who couldn't cut a promo. But yeah, this guy Dusty Rhodes, you know, he doesn't look like anybody, dude. You know, he's out of shape, you know, and he even brought it up in the promo. But people watched him. Why? Because he could connect with people, and that's to me, that's really what I miss when I watch wrestling now.
Yeah, it's rare because, I mean, it's been said before, but like I think this was Bret Hart's comment was always like, "Well, all the promos sound the same because the same guy's writing all the promos for everybody else," and this is kind of what you can get when you have talented guys that aren't beholden to a script and they can come out and like understand what their character is, and then play to that. And I think honestly, I think that's part of what the value of Dusty Rhodes in NXT is, you know, like a lot of these characters that have been successful recently, well, not so much the second run of NXT guys, but that first run of guys coming through NXT, all were really good. And a lot of it had to do with the work that they put in with Dusty, even though it's a different day and age in terms of the promos. Like, I think the promo psychology is something that Dusty is really good at.
And so when they finally get to the WWE, that's all thrown out the window.
Yes.
Yeah. So maybe as bad as people give, you know, a lot of people blame Dusty for a lot of things, like the Dusty finish and everything like that. One thing in that podcast that Austin did bring up was that, and Dusty brought up as well, was that people would come up to him off the street and say, "Hey, you know, like this promo really meant a lot to me because it was everything that I was feeling," and just to have that connection. You know, and that's kind of the whole thing, too, is like, who's the one guy that can connect that way with the fans in today's day and age of WWE? It's CM Punk. And what happened to CM Punk? He didn't fit the bill. He didn't fit the mold. And he ended up leaving. So it's just kind of like, you know, that's kind of, you know, with this whole podcast, like, I'm just trying to figure out why I am the way that I am right now with wrestling. It's just because wrestling's fake, but there's no realism to what anybody's saying, you know, and it started, you know, the Raw started with Roman Reigns cutting that great promo, and I knew he was going to call Kane like somebody's bitch. I knew that was coming, but it felt good when he said it. And that promo was a great promo. Dean's promos are really good. Bray's promos are really good as well. And then, so you have all these guys that aren't top guys, and then you have the Cena promo, which just doesn't work.
And what do all three of those young guys that are cutting good promos have in common?
They all are under the tutelage of Dusty Rhodes,
right.
And William Steven Regal as well.
Right.
You know?
Well, I would think Regal would be more ring psychology than promo. Not that Regal was bad on the mic, but I think Dusty's more in charge of like teaching them how to speak and stuff
yeah.
like that.
Any time you can say daddy in a promo, you know, I think daddy's like one of the most like daddy and Jack, you know, daddy, you know, daddy. And then if you say Jack, you know, call someone Jack. I mean, that's just
what about but Cena's calling people Jack all the time now.
Yeah, but yeah, all right, dude. we're gonna go out and fight right now, dude. you're shooting me in the foot every single time you do that, dude. So movie scale number 82, I have Better Have My Donuts over here with his maybe 73, 74 followers, maybe 71. So a couple of people left, or
no? I think it was at 70 last week.
Good, you got one follower. Good,
apparently.
Proud of you, man.
Thanks.
Good job. As compared to my 654. But you know how that goes, dude. So Moose Skull number 82, we'll check you guys out next week, and we're good to go from there, right?
Sounds good.
All right, so trying to stay awake, dude.
Bulletproof wallets, 20G kitchen sets made out of Korea. Top seer, gots to be a lot to see a rock. Knots be read up behind the stove, actions how Maria pop Leah. Cursed out Nia, burst out a purse with the guard Judea from Stark Pizzeria. Peace hate the beer, uh-huh. Especially when the shots ring off in slow motion when your head hits the meter. You lost 2 liters at the scene, came Skeeter. Peter slid through, took him down for his reefer. James chased Teresa with a hatchet on Easter. 2 murders in the hood, we call it double features. Watch how Ethan's freaks the best teacher. After prayer with the preacher, I can see it in the bleachers. And your girl, I might eat her. I'm a lover, not a biter. I still catch a 4 visa.
Be as good as the rest of them, or as bad as the worst. So don't hate me, you better move over, yeah.
You fucking idiot.
Yo.
Uh-huh. Wallace, motherfucker.
That's right. All my shit is bulletproof.
Salute for the motherfucker.
Bulletproof project.
Yeah.
Bulletproof wallet. Duck feet.
Rag good.
You heard? You bird ass.
ain't got a chance.